Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to another episode of RNIB Tech Talk. Now, there's a surprise hearing this voice, eh? I'm Hubert Pavelkovich. No, Callum Stoneman is not with us this week, but do not worry, Callum. I'm sure you're listening. We will look after the show in your absence. As always, this is your show. We would love to hear about your experiences of technology because this is what we are here to discuss. Tech for blind and partially sighted people, whether it's high tech, low tech, or, well, anything in between. Tell us what you think about anything that's accessible or maybe inaccessible that you would like to see improved, or any tech tips or tricks you may have. We would love to hear them. How do you do it? Well, it's quite simple. The email address you're looking for is techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That is techtalk at rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, I will be chatting with Martin Roberts from Humanware as we find out about the recent updates to the Stellatrek GPS and OCR device, what's new about it. David Hogg also hears about a new video game that has been created to help understand the effectiveness of nystagmus treatments. Joining me are our co-hosts, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran. Welcome into you both. Let's find out what's in the news, shall we? Jackie Brown, what's happening for you?
Okay, well, this week I've been looking at music streaming services because I tend to switch between Spotify and Apple Music, and I was using Apple Music because I got a few months free on an offer they had, so I stayed with them for quite a while. But what I've noticed with Apple Music, and I don't know if any of you have noticed this, but my gripe with Apple Music is that sometimes when you download an album to listen to and you want to download it onto your phone for offline listening, whatever, I notice on occasions an album would be missing a track. So you could have, you know, what track 1, 2, 3, and then skip to track 5. And I've never understood why this happens, but it does on occasions with Apple Music. It doesn't seem to happen to me when I use Spotify. So I downloaded an album this week, a new album that I wanted to listen to. And sure enough, track 4, I think, was missing. And I thought, right, that is it. I'm not paying for something and I'm having tracks missing on the album. So I went back to Spotify. And because I've been a Spotify user before, I've got 2 months at $5.99 and then it will go up to the normal price. But that's fine. I'm just going to stick with Spotify because I don't get any of those issues. I sort of download whatever I want and it's in my library. So I'm just going to stick with it. But I just wondered what everybody else is doing, what they're using. Anybody got any thoughts on why Apple Music do this? Or is it something really weird and quirky that's happening to me? Hubert, Natalie, what are your thoughts?
That's quite interesting. For me, I've been always kind of going between the two. I've started off on Spotify, and at the time the accessibility was good, but voice over focus was jumping around so much that I couldn't deal with it. I thought, no, this is not for me. I've been an Apple Music user for about 8 years, and I love it. For me, I love it. It's across all my devices. It's very accessible. It's very familiar. There are certain features that Spotify has that I wish Apple Music had, better recommendation kind of mechanisms and a few more kind of stats. Equally, there are some features that, for example, the music app on the Mac has that the music app on iOS doesn't. My particular favorite is Smart Playlists, because I'm one of these people that loves listening stats, loves to track my music trends. And I love Smart Playlists, but I need to go on my Mac in order to create them, which is fine. It's doable. But I wish it could be done on all devices. I don't download my music unless I'm on a plane. And when that does happen, I have found that you have to, if I download a playlist, I always go through each track and make sure that it has been downloaded, because sometimes, depending on where you are with connection, it can sometimes miss tracks for whatever reason. Natalie, do you have a preference of streaming services for music?
I only ever really use Spotify, because I have to admit, I resisted streaming services for a long time.
So did I.
Whilst I only use Spotify, I did also use Amazon music. The reason I resisted it was sort of a, for want of a better phrase, unethical sort of grounds. I felt it maybe wasn't doing the artists the justice that they deserved. So I struck sorry, I stuck to CDs and the old-fashioned way, if you can call it that,
Yeah,
of
I've done that as well. Yeah.
Ripping them onto my laptop and then transferring them across. But I do use Spotify and I do like it. But what I would say, Jackie, is I've not, like I said, I don't use Apple Music, so I can't comment on that. But you've reminded me of something that I'm wary of on Audible, actually. So the audiobook service, where just because it has the start of a series doesn't mean it will have all of the series. So you can get a really bizarre situation, exactly like you've described, Jackie, where you'd get books 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, not 6, but 7, 8, 9, 10, with no explanation as to why. So it's something, as well as looking out for consistent narrators, if I start a new series, I also check, do you at least at this moment in time have all the books in the series before I embark on this adventure?
And of course, that's the thing with Spotify is that you get, like, in my plan, is a premium plan, but it's for one person because that's all that I really need. That you get 15 hours a month, I think, of audiobooks. And of course you get the podcasts and stuff as well. But my son's a long time Spotify user. He's used it for years and years. And I was talking to him about this week, and he said, I just prefer Spotify because it does everything I need it to do. He's got his playlist set up, and he has different playlists for different members of the family. So if he's got the children in the car, he can choose a playlist for one of them. And his partner Lisa, she has her playlist, and it just works for them. They're very ingrained in Spotify. And I just decided, he often sends me links to try tracks, and he says, I think you'll like this, Mum. So I'll sort of, try out the music that he suggests, and it just kind of works. I just feel a bit irritated at times. While Apple Music is really convenient, as you say, Hubert, it goes across devices, but it is, sometimes it does sort of drop tracks, and I thought, no, I'm not doing this. But now I have, used a streaming service. I probably will, but I'll only keep one. There are people I know that have multiple accounts, multiple subscriptions, and quite frankly, I just think, why should I pay all that money for all these services when I've actually bought the stuff? I've got loads of CDs which I've ripped onto my computer. Why pay for it? So I've only got one streaming service at a time, and I'm pretty stingy that way, but that's why I do it.
Interesting. Well, what music streaming service do you prefer? Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon Music, or do you indeed have another one to recommend? Do let us know. Natalie, what's new for you?
Well, I'm sorry, I've not got anything new and exciting to share with the team, but a bit like Jackie, I've got a bit of a pet peeve. I'm wondering if you, my tech talk colleagues, or indeed the listening community, can help me with. So I recently updated my phone, so I'm on iOS 18 point whatever it is. I say recently, I think it was a couple of months ago now, and I noticed that, as is often the case, some of the emojis have updated. But what's happened for the first time, at least that I'm aware of, is they've dropped emojis. So the emoji that I used to use quite often was the smiling face with heart-shaped eyes. Well, that was VoiceOver's description. And that's now gone, but it's been replaced with face with heart-shaped eyes. Now, I don't have a problem with that. I'm happy to use the new one. What I have a problem with, and it's really starting to get on my nerves, is the fact that the old one, as it's calling it, the ghost face, because it's still hanging around there, is still in my recently used. Now, what I expected to happen was with all emojis is that as you start to use new ones, the ones you haven't used for a while sort of shift sideways along the screen and eventually fall off the edge. Until you research for them again, however you choose to do that. But this one just will not budge. And it's still in my top five. And I haven't used it because I've not been able to use it for at least 2, 3 months. Can anybody help me with that one?
Jackie, any emoji advice?
I don't actually, but I have. I think I've still got that one. A smiling face with heart-shaped eyes. I think I've seen that recently. But I don't know how you sort that problem out, Natalie. I love images myself. I do enjoy them. I like to use them when I'm texting people. I've got, some random ones in my kind of favorites, football, when I'm, texting my son at the weekend when there's a game on, lots of football images coming out. I've got all kinds of stuff when I'm flying to Scotland to see the family. I'll put plane taking off, plane landing, and aeroplane seat. But I don't know about this one, Natalie, at all.
The only thing I can recommend is using all the other emojis below that one, and hopefully at some point eventually, depends how many times you use them. I don't know if it's this sophisticated, if at some point eventually it will just drop because all the other emojis are taking it over. That's the only thing I can recommend.
That's what I expected to happen, Hubert, but it's not. So I haven't used that particular emoji, like I say, in a couple of months. But I'm still a heavy emoji user. There's plenty others that should have taken its place, but it's just stubbornly hanging around. And if I do use it, like when I first updated and didn't realize there was a problem, I noticed something was wrong because I think on text it just wouldn't appear, and on WhatsApp messages it would just say emoji. So that told me that maybe it's been phased out, something's not right. So I've not touched it for, yeah, a couple of months, and it's still in my top five, which is really irritating.
Ah, the wonders of emojis. I use them myself, although, mind you, I do keep a limit on them because some people can,
Overdue.
let's just say,
Yeah.
put quite a few emojis, and by the time you've gone through all the emojis they have used, you've spent about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So my advice is use emojis, but sparingly if you please. Right,
Yes.
now a little bit of news from me, tech-wise. If you are a fan, or if you're just curious about the Glide navigation mobility device from the company Glidance, to whom we have spoken to a few times on Tech Talk, well, they have organised some demo days that you can attend in London. And the big difference between them this time is they are in real-life environments. So whereas the others were in conference centres or in office spaces, these two are actually at train stations. So the first one is on Wednesday, the 28th of May at London Paddington Station, with the other one being on Thursday, the 29th of May at London Waterloo train station. So you can go on their website and sign up. You can then choose whichever session you wish to attend, as you get a choice of a few. And the meeting point at each of the stations will be announced nearer the time, so you can be sure to get to the right place. So if you are interested, I would say book these places quickly because we are recording this as of Friday, the 9th of May, and the first time it plays out will be on a Tuesday, so you might want to go and get your place booked as soon as you can so they don't go away and you don't miss out. But for now, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran, thank you very much. Stick around. It's another Tech Talk. May 15th, 2025 is Global Accessibility Awareness Day. But what exactly is it? And why is it important? Not only just to people with disabilities, but to the world at large too. Alan Russell is talking with Gavin Neat from solutions company Neatbox.
Global Accessibility Awareness Day. Now, it's not all about technology because, well, accessibility is in all facets of people's lives. Join me today. We have Gavin Neat from Neatbox. Gavin, thank you very much for joining us.
It's always a pleasure, Alan. Great to speak to you.
It's a huge day around the globe. We look at accessibility, but some people probably just think of technology and assistive or accessible tech. That makes a big difference, but it's really a wider picture than that, much bigger picture.
Oh, yes, very much so. In fact, I'm sitting right now outside St. Mary's Cathedral at the top of Leith Walk. And right now, I can see a chap with a walking stick. There's a lady there with a walking frame, and they're just directly in front of me. That's out of 10 people. Now, if I sit here for 5 minutes, I guarantee I'm going to see more and more disabled people. And I'm probably going to see more than I would have seen about 10, 15 years ago, definitely, because more and more people are getting out and wanting to do stuff. And we have to cater for those people. I mean, we talk about the Purple Pound all the time, and people will hear about it all the time. And they'll say, yeah, I've heard about the Purple Pound. But it actually means something. Those people are probably wanting to go somewhere to spend money. They're wanting to go out and get services. And that may be a pleasurable service, like a leisure center, like going to a pub or a restaurant or something like that. But it could also be going to the doctor's surgery. It could be doing something else. They are all wanting to do stuff. We have to be able to respond to that need with efficient and effective and consistent and sustainable services. And if we don't, we're letting them down. And we can't just be good one time. We have to be good all the time. And you don't have to be 100% all the time, because people can be forgiven if your intention is to fix things. But you have to do your very best as much as you can. And that means putting into place processes by which that can happen.
Technology itself is part of it, and that can make a huge difference. You know, as you say, Gavin, it can make a difference if we are looking to buy a product online. It can help us trying to find, say, a building. We're trying to access a building. Technology will play a part, but you know, we have to think about the accessibility of that technology as well, not just usable but accessible.
Yeah. Well, when I started in this game back in 2007, I think I became aware of the first iPhone that had voiceover on it, and I was like, "What? This is amazing! This is going to change everything." But what I wasn't seeing was in innovators and inventors and developers actually developing ordinary everyday solutions that were actually providing those services within them for those demographics. And I was like, it's absolutely fine to be developing new and inclusive technologies, but they have to be accessible to everybody from the get-go. And I know disabled architects and engineers who are involved from that stage, and they're doing really, really good work to make sure that trainees are actually putting these things into place. But we all know that when you build a building, it has to have accessibility built into that building. But when it comes to websites, there's still people doing it without it. That's the stuff that we just have to keep drilling in and putting into the very initial training that somebody's going to go through to actually deliver it.
So you mentioned the iPhone. I can't see the screen, but I can do shopping. I can listen to music. I can do social media. I can do my banking all from the palm of your hand, if you like. But part of the worry I have is when I see that word of updates appears and you think, right, is the now go to work after this update? And that's always a bit of a, just something that can trip you up.
I see that chat all the time online. The chat is, has anybody downloaded the latest update? Has it messed up everything on my phone? Is it okay to download it? And I think that's something that will sweep around the disability demographic of people all talking and saying, is this step forward going to be a step backwards? And it shouldn't be. And people are working hard, but the people who are developing that stuff, they have to constantly maintain a level of understanding. And part of that comes from the employment of disabled people. And I'm always going on about ERGs, employee resource groups within companies. Employ disabled people. If you're designing anything for society, make sure you've employed disabled people, because they're going to give you feedback before you even launch the product. In fact, they're going to be designing the product with you. And I would always say that's top of the tree, employ disabled people.
So when you started your business, you used to work with guide dogs, and then you started Neatbox. You looked at a system called Button, which helped with traffic lights. Now it's Welcome. And that covers a multitude of businesses or services. But it's a technical way, but it's a simple way of really improving accessibility for the consumer and the customer, and you know, supporting the people giving service.
Combining all three of the aspects, the digital, the physical, and the social together, combining them all and saying, you can't have one without the other two. We'll start with the digital. I'm going online, I'm having a look at a particular site, and I can find out through their website, which is accessible, I can find out when they're open. And then I can look on something like Ewan's Guide or Sociability or Snowboard or one of the other many fantastic sites that are out there on whether somebody's done a review before. And then I'm actually going to travel to the venue. Do I have to have accessible transport? And then when I get to the venue, it has to be an accessible venue. But, and this is key for me, and it was key for me with Welcome, is that when you get somewhere, you want to know that the person that you're meeting has an understanding of your need. And I mean, when I worked for guide dogs, I would turn up somewhere and then my client would then be explaining to the staff member how to interact with them. Now, you do that 3 or 4 times a day and you get tired. How brilliant to be able to do that in advance, which is obviously what we do with Welcome. And when it comes to retail, we've been looking at that very much as like, would you like a personal shopper? And we've all seen personal shoppers in shopping centres in the past. Back in the day, we knew that if we were going to someone like Debenhams or Selfridges or John Lewis or Harrods, yeah, like we all get there. But we knew that there was a personal shopping service which we could maybe use in advance. Well, I love the idea of having something where disabled people can have personal shopping just by standard for free. They know that when they arrive, the person has been given some information that they would probably have to give face to face when they arrived, but that they can deliver that in advance, so that all of the conversation is about fulfilling the reason for going to that venue with somebody who's knowledgeable. And that's what Welcome does. We've got loads and loads of venues now.
Tell us then about Welcome itself, Gavin. So if someone who is blind was can Neatbox help me, what would it do for me?
Let's look at just one of our venues, Silverstone Museum, main racing circuit in the UK, Formula One, all the rest of it. Their museum is phenomenal. They approached us through a chap called Nick Wilson, who's a well-known disability advocate. He spoke to Silverstone, we contacted them, and then they put Welcome in place. Now, they then put it on their website. So if you go to the ticketing page, you scroll down the ticketing page, and there is the ability to say, I'm coming, fill out a profile for Welcome. And then as soon as you say you're going, you can specify whether you want sighted guide at the door, whether you need any help at all, if you just want to be ignored, but you want somebody to know you're in the building. It triggers training within the team. So I did a visit to Vinderlande Romanfort in Northumberland. And when I was walking around the venue that day, and I'd set up the visit the day before, every staff member I spoke to, I said, oh, nice to meet you. Fantastic. Oh, just as a matter of interest, what do you know about epilepsy? And all the staff members said, oh, yeah, I watched a video about that this morning. Every member of staff had watched a 2-minute video on what to do if somebody was to have a seizure while they were at Vinderlande Romanfort that day. And that's exactly what it does. It gives you the opportunity to let somebody know. And if you're purchasing something, you could potentially go to a particular store. Well, we've got it at Battersea Power Station in London. So you could say, I'm coming to Battersea Power Station. I need to get to Next. Or I need to get to whatever shop, Boots or something. You'd be met at the door by somebody from customer service who they could then give you a sighted guide if you wanted it. Or you could follow them if you were a guide dog, or they could just say, I'm here, Michael. I know that if you're here and you need me, all you have to do is shout out, I'm going to be around. And also you could specify that you wanted to find out what the accessible toilet was. So instead of having to get there and say, could you show me what the accessible toilet was? You know, the person's going to be already aware that you need that. So it's just advanced warning, advanced awareness, or just letting somebody know a little bit of information. And I think this is key, when you visit using Welcome, the next disabled person gets better assistance. And the more disabled people using service like this means that more people in general know more about disability. And that's key.
And it's a confidence builder for the staff as well, because if they know, they can give good service as well. So, you know, it's not just the customer or the consumer, if like the benefits here, that the staff member and the business does as well.
What person turns up to an interview for a customer service job and says, I want to give bad customer service? Nobody does. Everybody wants to give good customer service. People in customer service, people who are designed to be in customer service, they buzz when they get good feedback. They absolutely love it. If somebody says, you know what, that was brilliant. If their boss turned around to them and said, you know what, somebody phoned up the other day and said, you were fantastic. That staff member doesn't just go, that was brilliant. They go, my boss knows I'm brilliant. And of course, we do that within Welcome. Within 24 hours, you could leave a review to say that staff member was absolutely fantastic. Or indeed, you could say, I met that staff member, but they didn't introduce themselves. And I kind of know that Welcome says introduce yourself as part of the training. So I'm interested to find out why they didn't introduce themselves. And then we can keep them right. We can hold their feet to the flames. And that's what we do within the system. It's instant feedback on how well somebody does. I'm very happy to say that vast, vast majority of people who leave feedback on Welcome leave positive feedback.
You started, as you said, Gavin, very small in Edinburgh, maybe one or two shops there. But now you're across the UK, you're across over in Ireland as well, and it's still growing. And that's down to the people that use and ask for places.
The vast majority of people that are listening to your show will either be visually impaired themselves or have a disability and a visual impairment, or they have family members and friends who are disabled. But this is for everybody. Anybody who has a disability or family member or carer or a professional who wants to utilize this system to help the person they're with, they can also use it. So it's available for everybody to use. It's free. You also don't have to pay for it. You can use it through my.well-co.me. My.well-co.me. You can set up a profile there, but you can also go to venues and it will be on their website, and then you can use it through their website. We have one of the major cricket grounds is going to be launching. I can't tell you because they're keeping their powder dry. They'll want to do a big launch with it. And we're going to be launching with a very large organization across the whole of Ireland, Northern and Southern Ireland, in all of the venues, a personal shopping service, which is going to be phenomenal.
You are in other places. You know, councils are looking at this too.
Yeah. Edinburgh Council have it in a lot of their council buildings. City of Westminster Council have now just taken it for 2 years in all of their public-facing buildings, so all their libraries, all their leisure centres, all their adult training facilities, all of their council buildings all have welcome. And if you were to go to their website, then you'd be able to plan your visit through their website to any of the venues that are on the platform. CV Life in Coventry have it in all their leisure centres and libraries. Coventry Transport Museum, for instance, have it. So, growing all the time. It takes about 2 hours to set up a new venue. So if somebody wants it in their venue, just let us know and let the venue know. And I absolutely love this because of my connection to Guide Dogs the Blind, is we're about to launch with a vet practice. Vet practices historically have not been fantastic at focusing on the disabled person because they've been focused very much on the pet. So what we want to do is make sure that they can actually understand the disabled person when they arrive. Of course, guide dog owners as well, but any pet owner. And that should lead on to things like dental practices and all that kind of stuff. So loads going on.
Gavin, if people would like to find out more about Welcome, then how can they do that?
If you're a LinkedIn user, you can find me on Gavin Neate, N-E-A-T-E. Connect with me on LinkedIn if you're a LinkedIn user, but you can also find us on Facebook, I think probably a really cool way to find us. Or, of course, I can go to our website, which is well-co.me. Well-co.me.
Good luck with the new launches, Gavin. And thank you for joining us once again on R&IB Connect Radio.
It is always a pleasure. Thanks, Alan.
Researchers from the University of Southampton have created video games to help better understand the effectiveness of nystagmus treatments. David Hogg finds out more.
You're listening to R&IB Connect Radio. Researchers at the University of Southampton are inviting the public to test out specially designed video games to test the effectiveness of nystagmus treatments. Joining me now to discuss the research is Dr. Jim Self, Associate Professor of Ophthalmology at the University of Southampton. Dr. Self, thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. Nice to speak to you.
So, first of all, how did this study come about?
It's an interesting one, actually, because we've worked on nystagmus for many years, and there's kind of emerging treatments for parts of it, and there's even emerging treatments to try and abate it completely now. But what the problem that we've had for many years is measuring the effect that we have. So, for example, we have things such as head posture surgery, where we can move muscles to try and give people their best direction of vision, if you like. So lots of people with nystagmus hold their head in one position because the eyes wiggle less when they hold the eyes in one direction. But when we measure the outcome of these things, it's often perplexing because patients will say, look, it's really made a huge difference to me, but we can't actually measure a big difference in vision or how fast the eyes are moving, and that doesn't always correlate with vision, etc. So traditionally in all eye studies, us ophthalmologists love a thing called visual acuity, which is reading that chart at the end of the room. And I'm sure you'll know that for people with nystagmus, that really doesn't capture vision at all. So I have lots of patients who, if you give them long enough on that chart, can read really low. And this is the traditional number chart or letter chart. But the fact is, in the real world, when you try and cross a road or do something complicated, you need to see quickly and you need to move your eyes in the right direction. So actually sitting in a dark room with as long as you like to read the letters really doesn't capture vision. So we've known this for a long time, but we haven't really had many good tests for it. So what we've done is teamed up with our team in Southampton, some of whom are mathematicians. We have computational modelers, we have AI experts, games designers, digital artists, etc. And essentially we've created a little suite of games which are designed to pull out the visual problem that people with nystagmus have compared to other people who have similar actual visual acuity levels. So to say that more simply, essentially these games are designed to pick out and make hard, complex tasks for people with nystagmus, but not with people who have similar vision for other reasons. So we've done a little bit of work on this in the past. We did a thing a few years ago using patients' mums' faces, and they had to recognize the mum's face as quick as they could. And we've kind of taken this to the next level, really, using some very clever sort of computational tools, but essentially designed three games which are quite complicated but very visual, and we essentially want people to log in and play the games, and from that we'll get data showing which ones are the best at telling the difference between someone with nystagmus and someone without nystagmus, And then those games can be used when we have treatments to say, well, we'll do it before a treatment and we'll do it after the treatment and we'll see what improves. So it's all about getting a bespoke visual assessment tool for people with nystagmus, because nystagmus is a lot more complicated than just not being able to read that chart at the end of the room.
It's interesting that you've used games as your methodology for getting your data in this. Why is that the avenue that you went down, and what were some of the other options that you could have gone for?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So there's a couple of answers to that. One is that when we're treating nystagmus, in inverted commas, and particularly with new treatments, we know we need to get in early. So visual development is really important. People with any form of visual problem below the age of 7 or 8, if we never get it better than a certain level before that age, it will never get better. So if I take a 20-year-old who's had a cataract in their eye their whole life, I could take that cataract out, but it will make essentially zero difference to their vision. So the brain is learning to see for a relatively short period after birth. When I say short, it's years, but it's up until about the age of 7 or 8. So we're always going to need good tests for people under that age, purely because that's when we're going to need to target the best and the most impactful treatments. The other reason for using games is that it's essentially, they're quite addictive, so people will do them. And if for most of these tests, it's about repeating it numerous times, so it's got to be engaging and fun. And I guess the final reason is that through games, we can measure things multiple times that people would just lose the will to live if they were just doing it in a very dry scientific experiment kind of setup. So that's really why we've gone down that route. And I suppose the only, you asked about alternatives that we could use much more kind of dry traditional ophthalmology tests, but frankly, through working on this in it over years, we find that people's engagement with it is far less. And I suppose the final reason why it's really useful to have games is that we can actually mainstream these. So the Nystagmi games, which we're talking about now, are actually a spin-off of some other games which we've developed for amblyopia, and they're supposed to, in the idea of those is to encourage engagement and sticking to patching regimes, which is a real problem in amblyopia. And again, amblyopia is important for people with nystagmus because it's way more common. And in that game suite, we've managed to get onto the app stores and mainstream them so that people can use them at home, etc., etc. So gamification is a really useful tool for trying to get to where we're trying to get to.
And if any of our listeners with nystagmus want to take part in the Nystagmi game and contribute to your research, what is the best way for them to do that?
Well, that would be fantastic, and we really encourage that. And in fact, it's not just people with nystagmus. We need people with completely typical vision, and we need people with reduced vision for other reasons. So essentially, everybody. We want everybody and their families to play these games. The best way to do it, so it needs to be done on a computer at the moment. We haven't developed tablet or iPhone versions, and there's a few boring reasons for that at the moment. So it has to be done on a computer with a mouse. So if people find their way to nucleolus.co, so that's nucleolus.co, they'll find the spin-out group that we're developing these with, and you'll navigate your way to the nystagmus games. So it's a very quick Google search, we'll find them. So if you search for nucleolus.co, you'll find these nystagmus games, and there'll be a link with some questions in it. So we ask people to give us feedback on the games, which ones are most engaging, which ones are too difficult. But also, we'll be collecting data behind the scenes on how quickly people have managed to do certain parts and various other aspects of their kind of functioning in that game, which will help us decide which one's the best to take forward.
Brilliant stuff. Well, Dr. James Self, Associate Professor of Ophthalmology at the University of Southampton, thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
No problem. Lovely to talk to you.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Time to go to the postbag. Yes, it's your emails, and we've got one from Marion. Well, Natalie, I'm glad you're here because this one is for you. Marion says, Dear Tech Talk team, thank you for such an informative programme, which I access via the RNIB podcast on my Victor Reader stream. I have been going through back episodes and have found Natalie's introduction feature some months ago. Natalie, I have a question for you. Like yourself, I rely on a talking watch, and I find these devices quite clunky and unattractive. When I had sight, I always wore a stylish and an attractive wristwatch. but sadly, now I have to rely on a talking watch, which is most non-stylish. You mentioned in your introductory feature that you have found a stylish, pretty verbalising watch, and I wondered which one it is.
Hi, Marion. Thanks for the email. Yeah, I can tell you exactly which one it is. So I've used Verbalize, I think as VoiceOver calls it, a company for a while. And every now and again, I get all wound up about the fact that, like you, I can't find a watch that I think both looks nice and sounds nice. I have found pretty watches before, but they often sound like Darth Vader, and I'm not a fan of that on my wrist. So it's Verbalize again, and it's so Verbalize talking watches, and they now have a luxury range. And I think for men, they have two styles, and for women, they have three. And I think if the men's anything like the women's, I confess I've not checked both, it's the same watch, but with three different colours or straps. So the one that I went for was silver. So it's silver markings, as I understand it. So it's got a white face, and instead of having numbers, it's got silver markings for the numbers. And round the edge of the face is Swarovski crystals, which jazzes it up quite nicely. Yeah, exactly, Jackie. And then you can choose the strap. And I went for, I can't remember what it's called exactly, but like white metal plated strap. So the other option, I think, was white leather. And there might have been a third, can't remember. But I thought that the bracelet strap tends to sound a bit fancier. So I went for that version. And I'm very happy with it. And what really drew my attention to it was they told you what voice was on it. So I actually Googled the voice actors and was able to find excerpts of what they sounded like. So I knew it sounded nice. You could switch voices. So you can have a male voice speaking in 24-hour time or a female voice speaking in 12-hour time. Though I would say double check that for the colour you're going for. So I went for the silver one and then was so chuffed with it, I went for the gold one as well. And I phoned up to double check this, and I think they said that the silver one had the option to switch voices, but the gold one didn't. Don't ask me why, but it was a manufacturing decision / mistake somewhere along the line. And if you press the button once, you get the time. If you press it again, you get the date. And if you press it a third time, you get an alarm. I confess I don't really use those latter two features, but I know some people might like them. The only tiny drawback for me was I really like the chime feature, or hourly announce, as it's called in some brands, where you can turn it on to shout out the hour every hour, which maybe sounds like hell to some people. I really like that, but this watch doesn't have that. But I took that on the basis that, like I said, it looks pretty, it sounds pretty, it doesn't stick out like an obviously talking or different watch. It's slightly pricier than the other brands, or the other models, I should say, rather. So this one, I think I paid about £145 for, but I was extremely happy with it. So to me, it was money well spent. Let me know what you think, Marion.
How are we spelling Verbalize? Is it just as you would spell it?
I think it's literally just Verbalize talking watches. And I just did a Ecosia search or Google search. I don't think you can get that particular model on Amazon, but I have found them on Amazon before. So it should be fairly easy to find. I'm not sure I actually said in my explanation there as well. This one I went for was the Verbalize Ladies Luxury Talking Watch. That was the specific one I went for.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Natalie and Marion. If you end up purchasing them, let us know which one you've picked and what you think of it. Ryan has dropped us an email and says this. Hello from a first-time listener. I love the invention of artificial intelligence, and personally, I use the Envision glasses. I went for the Envision glasses as I found they were better at reading books than the Meta Ray-Bans when I received them. So, a question for you, Jackie. Have you used the Envision glasses before?
I have tried them. Yes, I have. I have tried them. As a product, it's probably unfair in a way to compare all the features of the Envision with the, all the features of the Meta Ray-Bans, because they are different animals. The Envision glasses are designed and you know, have features for blind and visually impaired people to use, whereas the Meta Ray-Bans are a mainstream product. And obviously, given that they are a branded name, Ray-Ban, of course, their glasses are very stylish, whereas the Envision glasses are sort of built and made differently. And for anyone who's seen them before, you'll know that there is a large sort of, it's like an arm that sort of sits over one ear, the right ear, and then you attach whatever frames you want to the front to use as the lens. Whereas the Ray-Bans are completely, they are a complete set of glasses, and you can get tinted lenses, or you can get prescription lenses put in them as well. So in that respect, and with the features of them, I think they are aimed at different markets.
Yeah, I think they're two very different animals too. I think having used both, you know, the Meta Ray-Bans are great, don't get me wrong, but they are not designed for blind and partially sighted people in mind. So although the features they have are decent, they may not work as well, and they may work a bit differently compared to the Envision glasses, where the features are specifically designed to help blind and partially sighted people. I've used them myself. And in certain ways, I have certainly found them more accurate than the Meta glasses, for example, when reading text or picking up text, live text, or reading documents, or, you know, recognizing products. I find them more accurate, but that's purely because I think they have been designed for that specific purpose. And I've used the Envision app as well, and they've got a new app called Ally as well, the personal assistant, which really enjoy as well, because I'm currently, I think you can also choose the personality of your assistant too. So I do quite like my sarcastic assistant whenever I try to take a picture of my post. It's quite amusing. But they are two very different products, I find. And, you know, Meta glasses, the Ray-Bans, yeah, they are more kind of like actual glasses and more stylish. But if you're looking at the Envision glasses, they offer you another flexibility where you can actually attach whatever frames you wish. So you're not limited as well. So I think there's advantages to both, and I think both are quite different in terms of functionality, target audience, and also, you know, price point. I think it depends what
works.
What you can afford really. But which ones do you prefer? Have you used both? Have you used one? Prefer one to the other? Let us know which one you prefer most. Or again, is there something we don't know that you've used that you would like to talk about? techtalk@rnib.org.uk, please. Time now on RNIB Connect Radio to talk tech news. And let's talk Stellatrek from Humanware, because it has been provided with an interesting update. Joining me now to talk about it is blindness product specialist for Humanware Europe, Martin Roberts. Martin, thank you for joining us.
No problem, Hubert. Good to talk to you again.
So for people that don't know, can you tell us a little bit about what the Stellatrek is?
The Stellatrek is a GPS device, an all-in-one GPS device. We've been doing GPS now for at least 20 years, and longer than that, actually, with Humanware. But we've had various different ways of doing it over the years, whether that's been Braille Note or whether that's been a device just simply called the Trekker. I don't know if anyone remembers that from maybe 15, 20 years ago, from the Breeze. Then we had the Trekker Breeze, and now we've got the Stellatrek. Now, the main thing about the Stellatrek is it has, obviously, it's got a much newer GPS chip and more accuracy and more computing power, but it's also got a camera, so it can do certain functions to do with AI, so things like detecting addresses on doors and telling you how many meters you are from them, things like crossing. So if you're crossing a road, for example, you can hold the camera in front of you and it will tell you if you're going off the lines, you know, if you're doing a crossing. And in the latest update, actually, we've just added traffic light detection, which is still, I think, somewhat in beta for certainly Europe and the UK. It certainly works a lot better in the US, but it's a new thing that you can try. So the traffic light detection, it'll tell you when the light turns red or you're green. That's some of the things we use the AI for.
I think the traffic light detection certainly can come quite useful, especially with crossings where I find the cones aren't always there. And I've had that a few times in London, actually. More now on the new update for the Stellar Trek I've seen talked about. Can you tell us a little bit about what's new with the Stellar Trek in the latest update you've released?
We've had the Trekker Breeze out for quite a long time. And what people said to us, you know, we really missed that book player in that product. It had a talking book player and a GPS device. Although we only have access to certain libraries in here, including things like Gutenberg, National Talking Newspapers, which is great because people, you can read your newspaper while you're traveling if you want to. Also, we have support for Bookshare, RNIB Bookshare. It means that we can get our books and you can listen to them in synthetic speech, and you'll find a lot of the same Victor Reader features that you know already. So moving through a book by, you know, line, sentence, heading, and so on. We brought back a book reader for people who want that functionality. We've always had apps on there. We've had the address detection, we've had quick reading, we've got a barcode scanner, we've got a compass app. You know, so we do have various apps built into it that we think will be useful to people as they're traveling, really.
It's been quite an interesting change because up until this point, there's been quite a separation from devices that have the book reader and the devices that don't. And one thing I've seen on forums quite frequently over the last week is kind of people going, you know, what's caused the change to bring the book player and kind of combine the Stellar Trek with some of the other devices that kind of did similar things before? What has made that change happen?
I think just feedback from the Trekker Breeze and people saying we want some kind of book player. Now, I'll be really clear that we can't play RNIB talking books on this, right? You need to be able to using, in the UK certainly, something like Gutenberg or National Talking Newspaper, the National Newspaper Service, which is great, by the way. You can download your newspapers to it, which is, you know, big thumbs up for that one. And we can navigate through articles in the papers and so on. But we also, for students, have that Bookshare. And I guess, you know, if you have Bookshare, I think it's called Bookshare International. It used to be called Bookshare. So other people can subscribe to Bookshare and read books from that service. We don't have RNIB talking books on there yet. We are trying to find a way to work with you guys on this. I know that is something that we wanted to happen for a long time, but that's above mine, and I'm certainly above my pay grade.
And have you received any feedback from users following the changes? You know, is that the change that indeed people wanted? And, you know, is that reflecting in the users' feedback post the release?
Most of the feedback would go to our support team on that. I know that a couple of my friends have certainly pleased it's happened, one in particular. So I know that there will be people who will say, actually, this is really good to have, you know, a book reader back. I mean, you know, you go to a hotel, you want to read something, but you don't want to kill your phone's battery. It's that kind of situation. You might want to read it. So if you subscribe to RNIB's National Talking Newspaper service, it's great. You can say, grab your newspapers down.
And if people would like to obviously install this update and give it a try themselves, how can they do that?
Yeah, you need to connect your device to Wi-Fi. And if you want help doing that, just call our support team and we'll talk you through doing that on your particular home router or connecting it to a hotspot to get the update. We've added a couple more things, by the way. I'll just, in this particular version, we added the ability to do long form reading, so taking a page of text, but now we can save those pages for later recall. That's in the new version. In the one prior to that, we added more control over the verbosity of your GPS. So when you're out and about, maybe you don't want bus stops announced, maybe you don't want banks announced, you can turn off different categories of announcement. Sometimes things can get a bit busy if you have everything announced. And we've, of course, updated maps and stuff over the last, 7 or 8 months as well. So we're always updating. And those updates are free and they're over Wi-Fi.
And if people would like to find out more about the Stellar Trek and or make a purchase indeed, where can they find out more?
If you want to know more, you can call HumanWare on 01933 415 800. You can email eu.sales@humanware.com, or you can look on our website at www.humanware.com.
Fantastic. If you have used the Stellar Trek or indeed used the new update, we would love to hear your thoughts as well. Over email, it's the usual address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But for now, Martin Roberts, a blindness product specialist at Humanware for Humanware Europe. Thank you very much for joining us here on RNIB Tech Talk. Josh Loebner has been in the advertising industry for around 20 years and has used his lived experience of sight loss to help many major companies improve accessibility in their advertising and product design. He spoke to Amelia Hilton about his career and tips for blind and partially sighted people who want to enter the industry.
Josh Loebner, PhD, has 20 years of experience in advertising and inclusive design. He is partially sighted and supports global brand initiatives centering on inclusive design, disability, and accessibility. He also does research focused on greater disability inclusion within integrated marketing campaigns and the advertising creative process. He was the first blind juror at Cannes Lions and is now Global Head of Inclusive Design at VML. He's here today to talk about his career so far. Thank you so much for joining us, Josh. Can you give us some background for your career so far?
Yeah, definitely. So my background, I'm very curious, very adaptive and resilient, as I'm sure a lot of blind, low vision listeners are. And I would say that that's quite applicable to advertising. I've been in the advertising industry on the agency side for about 20 years. I started writing a blog called advertisinganddisability.com many, many years ago, before the topic was being covered by any of the trade publications or media outlets, before there were Cannes Lions that were supportive of accessibility. So I was a wanderer in the desert, so to speak, trying to get other people excited about it. And I worked at a number of different boutique agencies. I will say my first job in advertising was at Madison Avenue at Young & Rubicam, which is no longer at that location, but I can claim to have madman status. But I've been with VML now for about 3 years as Global Head of Inclusive Design. One other point in my circuitous route, I received a PhD focused on disability in advertising just a few years ago. So I balance both an academic brain and a professional industry brain, because it's quite important to think about education, particularly when it comes to advertising and accessibility and disability, to move the needle forward.
What are some of the projects you're most proud of in your career so far?
You know, what's quite interesting about just my background and others who focus on disability inclusion within business, whether it's advertising or any other industry, we bring a very personal lens into what we're doing, right? So my background, I'm fully blind in my left eye, legally blind in my right. I use a white cane every day. I use magnifiers and other accessibility and adaptive tools. So I'm mindful of the disability communities on a regular basis because I'm part of them, right? It's my lived experience. And it's been truly an honor and exciting to see the trajectory of people, businesses, organizations, brands, educators welcoming conversations and commitments about disability. A few that I'm super proud about: WPP, which is the parent company of VML. This past year, we launched a prototype for AI-powered audio descriptions when it comes to adverts. Most people are very familiar with subtitles or captioning to support people who are deaf or hard of hearing, or just anyone who wants another layer of creativity. Audio descriptions are still relatively new, and they do have a bit more nuance and complexity than subtitles or captions. And to be able to scale across a brand campaign, multiple languages, regional or globally, that's a challenge. So we're working with AI to be able to scale audio descriptions within advertising, which is something we're truly excited about.
What do you think are some of the main barriers you've faced in your career, and how have you responded to them?
We're at an amazing intersection of technology and accessibility right now. So for anyone who's part of the blind or partially sighted community, I would say if you enjoy adaptability, if you're inquisitive, if you're curious, if you're creative, being in the world of advertising is a wonderful career trajectory. But as well, we're at a moment that allows people who are blind or partially sighted to expand their horizons of what they want to do and how they see themselves in a working environment, to be able to really move in a way that had been a bit hindered previously because of technology limitations. But with AI, with other technologies, and with more of a welcoming from society, blind and partially sighted communities now have a place to be able to hopefully make their dreams come to life. But what it takes is a commitment. What it takes is being very open, being comfortable, asking for reasonable accommodations, but also, again, regardless of whatever industry you're in, diving into that subject matter and being an expert at it and having an opinion, whether it's writing online, creating videos. And I will say that there are challenges still to an extent in maybe certain aspects. Traditionally, when it comes to video, sometimes that can be a hindrance or a challenge. But for those barriers or bumps in the road, learn to navigate those. If one consideration of building your brand is a bit of a challenge, lean into another where maybe writing might be easier. But try to make connections, network, and start to have a voice in whatever you're passionate about so that you can rise to the occasion and start to be recognized for beyond what may be perceived as limitations by others.
And you've mentioned AI and us being at this very exciting intersection of technology and advertising. What is one future project or one kind of trend in your work that you think will be a game changer for blind and partially sighted people?
We're at a point right now where accessibility is still seen to an extent as information. We're starting to pivot from that towards accessibility as imagination, which is wonderful. Yes, we do need that foundational information. It's great that we have AI technology such as Be My Eyes, right, that can snap a photo and then interpolate that photo into an audible clip of what is in front of someone. We're seeing Ray-Ban Meta glasses do something relatively similar. Microsoft Seeing AI. These are all wonderful. They have numerous use cases. But the opportunity is that the entirety of my world as a blind person isn't information. I'm not an automaton, right? I'm not a robot that simply ingests information and then somehow is able to get a sense of the world around me in a way that brings delight. It may help me navigate obstacles. It may help me learn information about what the contents of a package are or the price of a product on shelf. But it doesn't give me innate joy or warmth or that human bond. That's where AI can start to push, where we are hearing more narrative audio description, where we are experiencing not simply ways to navigate around an obstacle, but hearing the world around us that's delightful, that lets us have conversations with our spouses, friends, and colleagues in a way that brings humanity together. So that's what I'm truly excited about. And we are doing that, I would argue, with some of the campaigns and projects we're working on. So advertising up until now has, to an extent, segmented itself from accessibility, where many advertising agencies and brands would look to third parties to be able to provide accessible components to a video advert, say, where we would, you know, wash our hands of the creative and then, oh, by the way, someone else will put subtitles in, you know, another business would put audio descriptions in. But that, to an extent, fractures brand messages, doesn't create another layer of creativity and sublime narrative. So the opportunity now as we move forward, hopefully, is that agencies and brands can internalize creativity and accessibility collectively so that accessibility is welcomed as simply another component of an advert or any other programming that's out there, or product design for that matter. So more brands and more agencies focusing on accessibility is something that can hopefully welcome more creativity.
Absolutely. And finally, Josh, where can people learn about some of your upcoming projects and research?
VML.com definitely is a place to find out a bit more about what we do. Myself, my role, I'm part of the Inclusion Experience Consultancy, which is a larger team of individuals where we collectively strive to support brands in moving forward across multiple and different marginalized groups. And hopefully from the brands that we work with, you'll get to see some of the work that we're doing in headlines across media outlets and anywhere else. And of course, if anyone wants to connect, I'm available to be able to share a conversation on LinkedIn. That's probably the easiest place to get a hold of me.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Josh Loebner, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Well, that is it. That is it for another episode of Tech Talk. Thank you very much for listening. And as always, if you have any questions or any comments for the show, do let us know. We would love to hear from you. It is your show and it's you we want to hear from. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is the email address you need. Do get in touch. We always love to hear from you and we will try our best to always answer your comments and your emails. But for now, from myself, Hubert Pavelkovic, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran, it's goodbye.
Bye from me.
Bye.
Bye-bye.